2 weeks in isolation brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. As you might guess, I'm Frosty still. I'm joined by the full complement, Ella, Dave and Cam. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Good evening.
Enthusiasm personified, you guys are. I guess there's other things on our minds at the moment. Should we just start off with the obvious ones? There was a Knicks game.
Yay.
We were good.
We were ruthless.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that is... It didn't look like we were exactly pushing the boat out, but just gave them a good old-fashioned toweling while playing well within ourselves. Let's skip on to the rest of it.
Like a really weird euphemism.
An old-fashioned toweling.
Yeah.
Well,
while playing within ourselves.
Yep.
It
didn't feel like we went full strength, went full bore of them once we had the second goal. It was kind of like, yeah, come at us. And we let them have it for a while, and, you know, they came down and created a few opportunities, but nothing, I think maybe a couple that I can think of where they could have scored, but nothing that we didn't seem to be able to control.
Mm. So let's go through the timeline, I guess. So first goal very early on, I think the third minute.
Third or fourth, yeah.
A tidy wee finish and a good little team goal, I thought.
Yes, it was. Mm. I think it was Tim Payne that put the cross.
Yeah, Tim Payne... to far post where Reno Piscopo read it really well, saw the cover coming across and just nodded it into the middle, and Davila's given it the old smash it into the roof.
Welly. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I guess he figured that I can't miss from here.
It was unnecessarily strong, but yeah. I quite like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. He's obviously not seen the quality of the A-League.
You just have to make the point that you're very, very good.
Yeah, and let's face it, that's his first goal, I think, in four games. Mm-hmm. So... relatively speaking for him, a bit of a drought. Mm. But still, I think he's 11
yep.
now.
It's 11 now, yeah. He saw me as well. That's when a celebration. He was celebrating to me.
Oh, yeah, I noticed him like sort of running over to you, and I was like, I bet that photographer's Cam. Yep, it's
yeah,
Cam.
Yeah, he saw me, and that was one of the best celebration shots I ever got. It was nice. Absolutely brilliant, yeah.
Nice. I did see Tim Payne giving it the old rocking a baby
yep.
celebration.
They all were. There was Davila. And Devlin was beside him, and Tim Payne was beside him, and they're all doing the rock of the baby thing for me. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, I thought that goal was pretty typical of the way we played. It just looked like boxing more than anything. Just keep them at bay, and then just as soon as we can counterpunch, yeah. Just run up the other end, score. The whole team looked pretty solid at that stage. We just like that first. I felt like the first 20 minutes we were just all over them.
I thought the first half we were all over them, to be honest.
I thought Victory came back a little bit, but like possession-wise, mm-hmm. stats-wise, but I don't think the quality of the chances, the opportunities they had were pretty minimal. But
there was one decent one, which I think fell to Rojas, which was cleared by a foot when he was going with his head. I can't remember what minute that was, but that's literally the only one that sticks in my mind that being a decent chance that they had in the first half.
It did feel like Rojas was very much the lone soldier up front. I mean, as much as Cam Soba got up and down a lot, his quality of interaction with the rest of his team is just nightmarish. At one stage, I remember him making a little bit of space up the middle and just putting a ball, diagonal ball out to the right side, and there was literally no one there. Mm. The guy who was up the right had not read it at all and was like, what the hell was that? Mm. It was, yeah, not great. So, I mean, I guess the second goal was fairly early on as well. Really just basically put the cat amongst the pigeons. 12th minute?
There was Libby Kikache was out on the left. Ball got cleared, I think, from a free kick, to be honest. I'm not 100% sure. But it got cleared out to the left. Libby picks it up. Weighs up his options and puts in a floated chip into the just well, about the penalty box.
Well weighted.
Yeah, very well weighted. And Hope has read it perfectly, and he's got some proper hops to get up to it and nodded it over Lawrence Thomas into the top of the into
with
the goal.
Was, goal as well.
Yeah.
That's realistically, not back no one really thought this was going to be a shot. I think even the cross coming in, you're thinking maybe he's going to chest it and try and turn or do something fancy, but no, he just realizes the opportunity is there to flick it on and does.
It was clever. It was clever play.
Yeah, we've got to give him a lot of credit because this run was absolutely inch perfect. But no defenders going with him, at least putting body on him, because realistically from such a direct cross, if a defender's there, you know, even if you get first head to it, you're not really going to get a good head on it.
Yeah.
Whereas he had all the time in the world to actually weigh that up and go, I can nod this backwards.
I mean, outcome I think probably would have been fairly similar if he'd had a defender on him just because of the way he's managed to put that into the perfect spot. But yeah, you're right. If they had anybody giving him any kind of pressure at all, it could have had a different outcome.
At the very least, if I was coaching Victory's defense, I would be saying you even if you're letting him go offside, you're giving him a wee nudge as he's, you know, you're making sure it's difficult for him to make any runs at all except backwards. Yeah. But no, they gave him free space. As you say, beautiful finish in that top corner. Yeah. Played for and gotten.
Yeah.
He would have looked pretty stupid if he'd tried for that and just nodded it right over the top of the crossbar. Or
actually, in this league, he wouldn't have looked stupid because that would have probably happened to every other striker that gave that a shot. Except here, he would have gone, hey, good effort trying that. I wasn't thinking you'd be doing that. So
Yeah. I honestly, that first half just felt quite like we just were.
The term you're looking for is easy.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely easy, but it was almost like it felt like it flashed by pretty quickly. Anyway, because there just was nothing from Victory. I think Marinovic might have had to make one save.
I have a photograph of him making a dive for a ball that did go wide. So that's literally the only thing I got of Marinovic first half.
Yeah.
So I don't recall him making a save at all.
It got him the one that flashed kind of across goal, and he, it would have had him worried for three quarters of the way through his goal box and then realised, that's fine. A lot of pressure kind of coming through that midfield. Again, like the last game, we were able to progress it through the centre of midfield a lot, which I was very surprised about.
I just think the combination plays between Steinman and Devlin is just better than everybody else at this point. They're finding space. They're finding the right passes. They managed to find their 10s who are managing to find their 9s. It's just they know where they're going to be. They're that well drilled. They know the lines they're going to run. They know the spaces they're going to be picking up. And it's working. It's working very, very well.
What I really particularly like is that Devlin and Steinman, it's not one playing behind the other. They're interchanging a lot. I mean, we saw Steinman playing a lot deeper and Cammy Devlin kind of playing this 8 role. But you're seeing Devlin now dropping forward and Steinman going ahead, and just that interchange must be a bastard to mark, because you can't just go, we'll watch for Devlin's run. We've got to watch for everyone's runs. Yep. And now that Hooper's kind of pushing off shoulder and then going back, Ball's doing the same, Davila's going wide, Piscopo's dropping into the middle. That's a lot of variety through that middle third of the pitch to make that, you know, to make that second and third pass to. That is, I'm really liking that. It's some nice football.
And we haven't seen anyone come up with a solution to it either, other than trying to kick them. That seems to be, and that's been what a lot of teams have gone with over the past couple of months, is just try and kick him and hope you can get away with it. And, you know, there's been varying degrees of success to that.
It's been a lot of success, Dave.
But no one's found an actual counter to it at all, other than, we'll just try and foul those players out of the game.
I guess that's the advantage of Hooper now finding his feet and finding the ability to connect, is that it's not just marking or booting Davila out of the game and forcing Ball to drop very, very deep to pick up the ball.
Well, I wouldn't even say it's been Davila that's necessarily been targeted. He's certainly one of the targets, but Devlin and Steinman have caught their fair share of that getting fouled out of the game as well. But when you've got that many of them in there providing an option, you can't be fouling all of them constantly. And that's why I say there's been mixed levels of success with that, because even if you do manage to kick Davila out of the game a bit, you've still got other quality around him that's just picking up that slack, and suddenly you're all too focused on the one player who they're not bothering to pass to because they're just playing around him.
Halftime, when it came around, it didn't I don't want to say it felt like we had it in the bag, but it felt like we had it in the bag.
Yeah, in so much as you can against the Victory, right? Like, they're a team who always can come back. Even at 3-0, you're thinking, oh, God, if anyone could do this, them.
Yeah. I don't see that as a Victory team. They were wearing Victory colours. They had that club badge. that was not a victory team in the slightest sense.
They've really fallen off since Muscat left. Whatever Kurtz was doing there, it didn't work, and they haven't been able to get a new coach bounce going. I mean, they did a little. They kind of started to get back into touch with the six, but
that was more Rojas showing up.
That looking at that performance that they put out, that was not what I would expect from any victory team at any point.
Their skipper, the number six.
Oh, Toivonen? Oh, no.
Broxton.
Playing him out wide. The guy is 132, very capable footballer, but doesn't have the legs, and they're making him go up and down, play wide, slot in. What I mean, you must have zero trust in any of your youth, in any of your fullbacks, in any of your younger centre-backs if you were asking him to do that.
You've got three positions, I think, where he could play, and two of them are centre-back. The other one is six.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
You don't want to put him in any other position now, just because he doesn't have the legs. He's obviously a good leader, and he leads the club well, but he's certainly not a fullback.
No, he's definitely not a guy that you want having to make flat-out 100% sprints. It's just dumb. Just a horrible use of a player that could serve you well if you employed him correctly. And it felt a little bit like that as well. I mean, the fact that they left Toivonen on the bench.
Yeah, that all seemed like an odd decision, eh? That seemed really
that's
odd.
Beyond
Was
odd.
He injured?
No.
There was a suggestion
in the lead up that he might have been carrying a niggle, but I haven't seen anything concrete about that. I think there must be something else going on there.
It was a suggestion of a hamstring niggle. If there's a hamstring niggle on your star player, you just don't play him.
Particularly when you're already losing like that, you weren't getting this back.
No.
Was it worth risking his injury? I don't know. So it suggests to me that the injury wasn't necessarily that bad, and maybe there was something else going on there.
Had he spoken out against the whole coronavirus thing at that stage?
No, because he'd got grumpy about it after the game.
They didn't. That was about 4 o'clock, I think, on Sunday afternoon. So they were pretty much leaving their hotel when they found out. So there was no chat prior to it at all.
Yeah. So we should probably get on to the third goal. Kikache?
David Ball.
Oh, yes, of course.
David Ball.
All by himself.
It's a lovely long ball. Yeah, I can't remember who was it.
It was Hooper.
Yeah,
Hooper's dropped a mile back.
Yeah, but that was a lovely pass. And his turn inside the first man was very good. His turn inside the second man was actually, he put himself a little far away from goal.
That was a hoof, not a hoof.
But his finish.
Yeah.
His finish. That was beautiful.
Because he's two-thirds turned the wrong way and then just has to give it the full hip twist to pull the trigger.
That was lovely. That was absolutely a beautiful finish.
So, yeah, I mean.
And what we deserve, to be fair.
It's funny because I've always had him pegged as not having the biggest, you know, having a lot of velocity on his shots. Mm. And
you don't need to if you put it in the right place.
No, that's fair. But he certainly got hold of that properly. So I'm thinking maybe he just targets shots. He's not a blaze of glory kind of guy. But yeah, he got hold of that really, really nicely. Victory felt like they kind of came into it a little more. I don't know whether that was we let them come
at us.
We set off.
Honestly, we didn't need to chase the game. They had to chase the game. They made a pile of attacking substitutions. I think they sacrificed one of their defensive line for a striker. So they basically said we need to throw more bodies up front. And we're like, actually, we can deal with that. We're fine. You haven't looked like scoring. And then obviously there's the – which I'm assuming you're getting to now is the Varsical situation for that offside.
Mean the drinks break we had?
Yes.
Like three quarters of the way through?
Yes.
I thought it was a mini break.
Yeah, it did feel like that.
They could have brewed a cuppa.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
I think maybe it was like the full tea break. You know, get Jeremy Coney out there talking with a former
cricket. The thing that was the most annoying was going back and watching the TV coverage later was that they weren't even showing replays of it. You got one look at it if you were a TV viewer. If you're going to be spending that much time looking it over, surely you can at least play some footage. Like, there's not really much footage to go back and look at to go, was it close enough? They needed to look at it that many times. The one angle we get to see on the TV coverage isn't great. But I genuinely don't know. I don't know how close it was because the one angle we see doesn't really tell me that much. It tells me maybe.
When I saw it on the big screen, I generally thought he was on.
Yeah.
I thought it was close, but close, not off close.
But then they spend, you know, 3 or 4 minutes mulling it over. Surely there's some other angles you can be putting up that, you know, I could now have looked back and gone, oh, I see why that was a tight call. Yeah. The only thing I will give them in their credit is they checked two things, not just the onside. They checked a handball as well. It clearly strikes kind of the shoulder of Naboo in the lead up, but just before he plays the ball in, and they wanted to check that as well. So you've got two VAR decisions they're essentially checking, but it still shouldn't take that long.
No, yeah.
Kind of makes a mockery of that whole clear and obvious error thing when you're going, well, there's just nothing clear and obvious about any of this.
Well, that's what I come to. If I take the eye patch off if it takes you that long to make a decision,
yeah.
One, you either go with the on-field call, just go, yep, okay, close enough, or you say, give it to the attacker because we want this, we want goals.
Well, it's interesting though. We kind of, in some ways, don't really know what the on-field call was that well because they're told.
I thought he had signaled for a goal.
Well, he signals a goal, but the linesman is told to keep his flag down and let the VAR check it. So if he thinks that's off, given it's just before the ball goes in, he knows it's getting checked either way. So he's told not to put his flag up. Right? That's the rule as they're given. So he might well have been in his mind going, I think that's off, but he's told not to rule that.
It was Sarah Jones.
Sorry, she. I hadn't noticed she was on the line. But yeah, no, that's the situation, right? As they're told, if it's tight, no matter what the personal feeling of that AR was, whereas I think in a pre-VAR era, you might well have had Sarah Jones sticking her flag up. We just don't know.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know whether it's kind of whether you need to communicate, whether that needs to be communicated by putting your flag up after it's been signalled. Yeah.
So it does kind of raise the question, what's the point in having an assistant referee if that's predominantly their role to signal offsides?
That's basically it.
To then say, well, we've got VAR to check it, so don't you worry about waving your flag.
Yeah, don't bother going into the goal box. Yeah,
if they miss, they raise the flag.
Exactly. So if that goes out for a corner, flag goes up if they think it's offside.
Yeah.
But if it goes in the goal, they let the VAR check it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I agree. I think that's silly. I think the call should be made as you saw the call. And if the call's wrong and a clear and obvious error, then the VAR fixes it.
Yeah. I think if it goes in the net, it's close, you let it run, goes in the net, you still put your flag up. So the lino knows if it's on field call. So the ref knows if it's on field call, the on field call is offside.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's been communicated perfectly clearly between the referees and the VAR. There's that discussion. But as a spectator, both on the TV coverage in this instance and in the stands, you don't know.
Yeah.
You're not really sure what's going on there other than a goal's been awarded and we're all sitting there waiting for 3 or 4 minutes while no one has any idea what's happening.
Can I give the other assistant credit for picking up the offside from the corner? And can I just absolutely roast the victory for this? Because the Matildas got caught doing this in their most recent game. And it's just where they do the short corner and end up passing back to the person who took the corner and they're offside.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you've literally just seen your women's national team do this 2 days before and you do it yourself. Just so dumb. It hurts. The stupid hurts. And it's not even my team. But just watch and learn, kids. Naboot, he was garbage. He is...
Don't hold back.
He's not a nine. It's like I used to put him and Williams in a kind of a similar thing. Him, Williams, Soterio. They're great wide players. They've got wheels. They can hit the ball out of nowhere. They can just pull something. But they're not a nine.
So was he garbage then, or was there a tactical decision made?
A square peg shot in a round hole.
I think he did the best he could, but I agree. He's not a nine. If you put him wide, he performs much better. So I don't think that's on him. I think that's a tactical decision made to put him there.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That is fair.
You know, I can't play up front either. If you put me there, is that my fault or yours for putting me there, you know?
Oh, I think there's a lot of blame if that happened.
There's a lot of shared blame there, mate.
Oh, self-flagellation would have to be going on. Notice I said flagellation.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll get your dictionary later, Ella. The one person in the room that would know. So the rest of, I mean, once Toivonen came on, he looked really urgent, like he had a point to prove.
No, he's been their best player all season.
Well, Marco's been good since he came back.
Oh, wow.
He's only played like three games.
Yeah.
So Toivonen's
been
best
all season. He's, you know, in all of those games, he's either been creating or scoring the goals. I mean, they've had a dire season, but the only bright spot has been him being quite good. So to sit him on the bench is very surprising. If he's really carrying an injury, okay. But it didn't make any sense to me. He certainly didn't look like he was carrying anything.
No. The way he put himself about, and certainly the grumpiness he showed was not the guy that was holding himself back. So, it was bizarre, especially with the personnel that they did deploy. Was it Kuda, the one guy who played 10 for them? Just didn't look like he was quite up to it. I've never seen him before.
Didn't look like a victory team. That's all you need to say, really. Mm. Like, Toivonen was good when he came on.
Rojas. By himself.
He looked like their best player while he was playing before Toivonen came on. But that's it. They had nothing else. You know, they're playing, obviously playing out of position. So there's two players you can specifically state with Naboo and Broxson playing out of their best positions. don't seem to have any tactical nous about what they're actually doing. And when we sat back and let them have the ball, they created one opportunity, which happened to be offside.
Yeah. So. I did hear mention that they had been told about the self-isolation before the game.
I mean, that would, to an extent, explain why they just seemed so flat. They did kind of look like a team that were just going, oh, can we just get to the airport? We just want to go home. We don't want to be here right now.
They were trying
what it felt like.
They were trying to actually get a flight out.
Yeah, they're trying to pull strings with Qantas and whatnot.
Yeah, which is interesting because Qantas don't actually fly out. They co-share with Air New Zealand, and so they would have had to fly out in the same Air New Zealand flight anyway. So, meh.
But if they had managed to get one, even if it had gone at 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, they'd have gone back in time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they'd have been on the ground. It takes, 3.5 hours. They had 10:30 at night, they could have flown, and they'd have been on the ground in Melbourne, and they would have been fine. So, but to get that news when they did, that was
not ideal in any way, shape, or form.
No, it's suboptimal. I guess,
find it surprising that that would mean they were down, though. I would have thought you would have gone, well, this is our last game for a while. Let's go out there and, you know, do the business rather than, let's half-ass it and, you know.
Well, maybe not so much like a half-ass it, but just it seemed, because I think I'd heard they.
Distracting.
Yeah, quite distracted. And I think they'd been assured when they flew out that they'd be able to get back. And which, then that rug's been kind of pulled.
That's what Toivonen said. Yeah. He said a government official had told them. I'm like,
which is a weird thing for a government official to say because obviously no one can actually predict.
The announcement hadn't been made at that point by the government, so they wouldn't have been asking that question, let alone a government official talking to Toivonen about anything. Like, maybe someone at the airport said, oh, you'll be right, you know, and that was about the extent of it. I don't believe they had some kind of assurance from the government that them travelling was going to be fine.
No.
I
don't think ScoMo was keeping the doors open for them.
I think that was because that only came out after the game and it was just him tweeting grumpily. I think, you know, you're on a team who's been losing every week and now you're going into 2 weeks of isolation and, you know, that's just him lashing out at something because he can.
And let's remember that it's, you know, at that stage it was 2 weeks of self-isolation, not group isolation too.
Yeah.
That would have made me grumpy as all buggery.
As far as I'm aware, they still are in self-isolation.
Yeah,
but I don't think they can...
No, they're not allowed to train at present.
They're not allowed to train. I'm assuming there'll be someone
working on that. Domi said that...
Melbourne Victory.
Victory.
As of this morning in the Phoenix press conference, were not able to train. They, because of the situation, like that's why we haven't travelled till we've got that all okayed. We have a facility that the Phoenix can go to and that's all going to be all right. The Victory arrived back, went to their own homes and are there. They can't now transfer them somewhere else and get them training. They're unable to train for 2 weeks.
And
they'll come out of that like us, and they'll need to play a game every 3 days for 3 weeks.
After two weeks of sitting on their ass.
And so I'm sure they have staff, and I'm sure the league as well are lobbying. In our case, with the New South Wales government, obviously they're based in Victoria, so it'll be different, but they are lobbying to try and sort that out. But they're at home separate currently and unable to train.
So basically they're out in their backyards with a headset on.
Doing keepy uppies.
Doing keepy uppies and doing drills yelled at by the assistant coach.
Yep, and getting emails with video that they need to watch and technical stuff.
The online stuff and all the video stuff, that's fine.
Yeah.
But actually staying match sharp.
If you don't have any kind of cardio equipment as a minimum in your house, any of it, you're going to struggle.
I don't think that'd be so much of a problem because they are match fit and they're well match fit.
They're sitting for 2 weeks.
Yeah, you've got to get them out basically out in the backyard and doing all that sort of stuff. But as far as passing a ball to someone goes and, you know, playing in a proper size field, that's a massive difference.
No, I think the basic skills of the game is going to be fine.
That's muscle memory. That sticks with you. At that level, you're not losing the ability to pass.
They cannot practice
the teamwork. Sessions again.
But the teamwork, that's gone.
They cannot practice the tactical implementation of what their management want them to do on the pitch. They don't have any time at all to practice that whatsoever. And that is where the problem lies. So they might be able to get as much classroom and stuff as they want. And all teams do that, obviously, usually in a group. But they can do as much classroom stuff as they want at home. They can do as many keepy-uppies as they want at home. But match fitness is going to go fast. And if they don't have any way of keeping their cardio high, and they can't implement anything practically on the training pitch, and they'll be playing before you know it. I actually, honest to God, I think they will draft in a pile of their reserves and for at least the first game back after their break, just because these guys are risking massive injury from having sat around for 2 weeks doing nothing.
It almost feels like the perfect use case for a VR setup. just get them all, like being able to train on a virtual pitch together and practicing formations and the like. But yeah, it's just.
Yeah. I think in reality, they'll get a few sessions in before a game, the way the Phoenix were talking. They reckon they'll have 2 or 3 days between ending isolation and having to play. The Victory are a couple of days ahead of that curve anyway, because they flew earlier. So I think they'll get in 3 or 4 sessions. It'll just be in a pretty compact amount of time. And I wouldn't be surprised if the club and the FFA can't sort out a solution for them getting somewhere in group isolation to train. I think you'll have them finding a local sponsor who ships each of them a treadmill and a rowing machine, or, you know, something, keep that fit.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's no reason they can't receive deliveries to their house. They absolutely can. It's only 2 weeks. Give them all a treadmill for 2 weeks and
just going to make sure that they're
for it. I'm sure there'll be something happening, but it just won't be ideal at all.
Yeah, just going to make sure that they don't hit their back, bring the treadmill in by themselves. Trust me, that happens.
Only when you're old.
Yeah, that is
very, very old.
You do that when you're actually, you do that when actually someone's helping you as well.
Mm. That's when you drop shit on your foot, remember?
No, that actually fell apart.
Yeah.
Well, this is bleak.
Yeah. This is what happens when you lift 100 kilos worth of steel.
So maybe we should talk about the real reason we're here today.
Is it not the podcast? You've got an announcement to make.
Do you have a close and personal relationship with your saviour, football?
What?
Have you not? When was the last time you had a Jehovah's Witness?
Have you seen his stairs?
No, oh, yeah, good point. No. It's Jehovah's Witness proof.
Yes, it is. It's Halloween child proof. It's Jehovah's Witness proof. It's only thing it's not proof is people trying to get money off you.
Sherpas.
Yeah.
Sherpa charity.
Yeah.
They'll be up there like a shot.
They are.
I guess we get onto the whole coronavirus thing because we were almost there anyway. So basically, the FFA has decided in its infinite wisdom that we will be playing all, at least the majority of future games. The format hasn't been decided yet, obviously, but certainly the things that have been circulating is maybe a slightly cut down structure, a compressed time frame, probable finals, but maybe not necessarily in the same format.
Yeah, so speaking from the press conference this morning that I was at, I can say a few things with reasonable certainty. So they will play the remaining rounds. In the case of the Victory and the Phoenix, that'll mean playing those remaining rounds across the space of probably 3 weeks. So we've got 6 games to complete in 3 weeks. So that's 2 or 3 games a week. For the other teams, they've got 5 weeks to complete the remaining rounds. It's a obviously expedited schedule, but not too bad, really. You're talking a game a week, a little bit over. So pretty normal for them, but likely to be based out of 2 hubs, being Sydney and Melbourne. Perth's messaging this morning was quite interesting because they're basically saying that ain't going to happen, whereas what Domi was saying at the press conference is basically that's all agreed, that it'll be 2 hubs. So I'm not sure where the disconnect lies there, but Perth seemed to be implying they won't be staying in Sydney or Melbourne for that entire period. So if they want to fly every week, I guess they can. And that there would be a final series following that, but there is very little agreement on what that looks like yet. But we will complete the regular season. Some sort of finals would take place after that.
Hmm. Do we want to discuss the reasoning for all this?
Yes.
Because football's being a good citizen, I quote.
I think that's
a complete load of shit.
Marketing spiel.
Yep, that's what I said.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not entirely on board with this decision of the FFA to continue the season. I think I'm not against the idea of finishing the season, but I think a more prudent and respectful to human need decision would have been to suspend it for a minimum of 4 weeks and then see where everything is at with the virus at that point.
Well, we should add that sport in Australia has basically, all other sport has been at least indefinitely postponed.
Not entirely. NRL hasn't. AFL still on. Yeah.
But AFL.
They're playing behind closed doors starting this weekend.
I thought they'd postponed it as well.
They have. I haven't heard that decision. It's been within the last 24 hours. But AFL was kicking off behind closed doors. NRL was still playing. They're checking what they can do about the Warriors. And whether they can play with a 15 team.
Yeah, the Warriors are screwed. Yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Spending an entire season playing out of Sydney.
Gold Coast. But so, worse. We have the advantage, obviously, it's the end of the season, so there aren't that many games left to play. But
and a very long off season.
Yeah, from a humanitarian perspective, it is entirely the wrong decision because you are taking guys away from their families, and it's obviously not just going to be the Phoenix. If they're basing in Sydney, it's likely Perth are going to have the same kind of issue as well. If they're basing in Sydney, I mean, Newcastle and Central Coast can head on down. That's quite good, but Adelaide going to say have the same issue? Are they going to have to base themselves over there? Especially if it's every 3 days that they're playing, then there's going to be, you know, there's going to be massive logistical nightmares.
Every 3 days will mostly be for us and victory.
Still logistical nightmares involved in that. The most logical decision, if that was possible, was say, hey, we're just going to stop the league for 4 weeks. We're going to see what happens with the virus, because within another week or two, if they head the same way as all the other countries that have had been greatly impacted by this, if they head the same way, they're going to have a national lockdown and you're not going to be able to play the games whether you want to or not.
So let's look at the best case scenario then. Best case scenario is the Knicks go over there, they spend 2 weeks in isolation, they then smash out 6 games in 3 weeks, potentially still on for the finals. We'd assume pretty solid chance of that.
Well, we can't miss out on the finals at this point, can we? I think we're confirmed.
I thought it was only academic.
No, there's 9 points. We're 9 points clear of seventh.
Okay.
Yeah, so we can still definitely be caught or definitely fall out of the – but
it would be very difficult with all the cross
points. Going off – here's the other thing, though. Like going off form on the current season, we probably look like the second-best team at this point in time, right, behind Sydney. Sydney definitely look better than everybody else, but – somewhere between us, City and Perth, I think we probably sit just above those guys on current form. But we're not getting to play another game at home. We've got 2 weeks in isolation. We're going to be away from everybody they love. They're going to be away from all of them for 6 weeks with a global pandemic kicking in. And that, I think, is going to cause a lot of...
It's going to be longer than 6 weeks.
Yeah, comfortably longer than 6 weeks, because by the time they get, even if
when they get back, they have to do two more weeks.
Exactly. 2 weeks, they stay for 3 weeks, they get lose, they don't make the playoffs, then they're out. And they've got to sit at home for another 2 weeks. So there's massive issues around that as well. So I think there's going to be some issues mentally for the team to get over the line. I think, you know, ability wise, they'll be fine. Fitness wise, they'll be fine. Tactically, they seem to be nailing it almost every single game, but it's not that simple when you're away from home for that length of time.
Hmm. The one thing about closed doors is that it seems that that home advantage is somewhat nullified, but we'll certainly get as far as a good control period of just working out, does it actually, you know, how much does it affect you when you are on the road living out of a suitcase?
And they also think if there's going to be closed doors, and they're talking about doing double header matches as well, then you've got, like, the home advantage goes for everybody except for Sydney and Melbourne when they're playing.
But even then, you're in the same dressing room. That's it.
It's just an environment you're used to. That's it.
And I think realistically as well, chances are the home teams are also going to be isolated. I think with the level of cases you're seeing in Sydney, even Domi was hinting at this during the press conference today, that it's very likely those teams are going to have to distance themselves from pretty much everyone. If you've got kids who are still going to school or whatever, you're probably going to have to start limiting contact with your kids for exactly that reason. If the chances of it spreading into the team environment become very high, and you've got this now shortened kind of separate world that is going to be this competition.
Because did Domi say anything, or did it come up at all? Like, what happens if a player gets diagnosed?
Well,
what happens then? Does the player get isolated? Does the team, like, surely at that point, what happens to the league? Surely then you have to stop the league.
I mean, the precedent is with the NBA. They literally had a player get diagnosed. His team was stood down. Then they went, actually, they've smashed out 3 or 4 games in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, like you just literally don't know who else, how else.
The Nets decided to test their entire squad and they found 4 people had it.
Valencia's got like 35% of their team that picked up the virus.
It's highly contagious. It's very easy to do.
I think it's very likely that's going to happen. Domi was asked that question in the press conference and basically said the league are making some plans around that. That's not going to be the Phoenix's call. You know, they'll wait and see. It's a fluid situation, he kept saying, which is true. It's fluid on all levels, not just for the A-League, but, you know, the government announced tomorrow will be, you know, different. But I think the one thing in all of this that really bothers me, that I'm probably going to rant about, so yay, is that in all of the messaging from the league and also from the clubs is that this was about putting player welfare first. That couldn't have been a bigger lie. It's just unbelievable that anyone's let them get away with saying that. If it was about putting welfare first, You would have cancelled the league. It would have stopped immediately, either suspended or cancelled, you know? Done. There is a deadly virus out there. It's highly contagious. Everyone stay the fuck away from everyone else. Yep. Not, you know what we'll do? We'll just play behind closed doors so the fans won't spread it to us. I mean, that's not about player welfare at that point, because as you've seen with other sports, players are going to catch this anyway. Mm. That's not keeping anyone safe to still be making them play and train and, you know, all of that stuff, let alone holding them up in hotels together and making them travel back and forward and whatever they're going to do. Any decision that involves continuing to play was not putting welfare first. Doesn't matter how many health experts you've talked to about how can we minimize risk, because sure, they're doing a hell of a lot to try and minimize it, but the way to keep people as risk-free as possible was to not be playing football anymore and not training and not doing any of that, right? So that says that the reason we're still playing is not about player welfare, it's about something else entirely. And the obvious answer is it's about the money, right?
The only answer.
I'm not going to say that this made it easy, because actually I want to say the FFA didn't make this call. I think the clubs made this call, and I completely understand why they made it, and the FFA have just been, you know, in charge of having to announce that, because technically they're still in charge of the league. So they fronted it, but I think the clubs have made this call, because the rumors I hear, and they're from pretty decent sources, is that the TV deal has a very hard deadline around the end of May, that if the product, being the games, is not delivered by then, there are massive penalties in that contract. That the rumor I hear is essentially Fox wouldn't pay for the season. They would be off the hook for all of the money they meant to front up for this entire season. So that suddenly, because of the way the league works, is the entire salary cap not being paid for all of the teams. Now, the money they get from the TV deal is the salary cap and a little bit more. It's the marketing budget and stuff. So you're talking, you know, close enough to $3 million per club that suddenly they don't have. And the other rumor I hear that, if it's true, is concerning, is that there is not the right insurance in place to cover this particular set of circumstances. They obviously have some insurance around a variety of scenarios, but that this is not one of the ones that's covered. So that the clubs are on the hook for that ballpark $3 million themselves in every case. Now, for some of the clubs, that's probably okay. You know, someone like Victory or Sydney, I think, can probably take a $3 million hit as a one time. The Phoenix, who knows? I mean, you're basically asking Rob and the Wellnix group to stump up for that. They probably collectively have that sort of money. Whether they want to pour in or not is interesting. But I would say guys like Charlesworth at Mariners are not going to stump up $3 million. And that leaves these clubs probably going bankrupt. So we're in a position from, if all of that rumor is true, that clubs are going, well, either we cancel the league and lose, you know, three or four clubs, because I agree, Brisbane would surely be on the hook. I would think Western United would be in a precarious position. What does it mean for MacArthur next year? Does it have implications for them? Does it have implications for us? You know, I think there's a number of clubs. So I think reasonably you could suggest three to four clubs might go bankrupt if you made the decision not to play the rest of the league. So I can see how they've gone, okay, let's not shoot ourselves in the foot quite that badly. How do we make this happen? And the answer at that point was minimize risk to players. Let's play it behind closed doors. Let's do all of the stuff that they're doing. And so those rumors line up very nicely for me with exactly what we're seeing happen here, is everyone is all talking about how we deliver the right number of games. It's not, oh, let's just play less games or do any of that. It feels to me like we're trying to deliver to contractual obligations here. Let's play the right number of games and let's play a final series and let's do all of that by the end of May.
The fact that they're playing the rest of the rounds before a final series, just
because if it was just about finishing off and deciding a winner, go, ah, okay, maybe we need to play a couple more games to finish out two rounds. Just make sure that's evened out. And anyone who's played three, you ignore that one or something. You know, you play a handful more games and then you have a final series based on two rounds. That would make a level of sense to everyone. If it was just about finishing the season and having a winner, that would seem the right and easiest answer. But if it's we need to deliver X number of games that we've promised under a TV deal, you'd head towards, oh, how do we fit, you know, six games into 3 weeks and then play a final series all without leaving the hotel, you know? And that's what we're looking at. And it's just crazy. Mm. But when you're given the decision of, even as a fan, I go, do I want to see the Phoenix fold? Or maybe some players get sick. Now, the answer should be really simple, that we should never risk anyone's lives, right? It should be that easy. But if you've got health professionals going, but if you do all this stuff and then you look at the figures around the disease and go, well, they're healthy, they're young, they're unlikely to be affected badly, I can see how they've ended up at a place where they've gone, this is an acceptable level of risk. But they can't say any of that publicly, right? Because the second you go, oh, no, we've put the TV deal ahead of players, you will get slammed, even if it was really hard decision and you were between a rock and a hard place. But you still can't say that out loud, right?
No, because the PFA would be forced to sue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I can see why the message is, no, player welfare is at the highest priority. But no one is talking about the fact that this is clearly about the TV deal. That to me seems an absolute no-brainer, that we are just trying to fill out whatever we had to deliver under that contract to avoid whatever penalties they are. And if we're willing to take this much risk, those penalties must be big. Yep. And that the potential impacts on the league must be huge.
Yeah. When you pitched this theory, as soon as you said it, I was kind of like, yeah, that's the only possible reason why you would do that. I was thinking the FFA were ignorant, naive, and quite possibly just borderline.
I want to be very clear before this gets taken too far that is all rumor. I don't have an 100% source on any of that, but I hear it from enough people that I trust that I go, yep, this all makes sense. And I'm willing to say it on this podcast, but do not take that as gospel. Do not assume that is definitely what's happened. It's allegedly as fuck.
Yeah. allegedly as fuck. Let that be the title.
In the end, whether that's the case or not, the one organisation with all of this who could literally save all of this hassle is Fox by saying, correct, actually, you don't need to deliver.
Yeah.
And we will
give you an extension on that contract, or absolutely, we will do X, Y, Z to make this happen.
Yes, absolutely.
And leave it for a month.
Leave it for a month. Yeah. We will stop in a month when this is either gone brilliantly and there's no more issue, or it's gone horrendously bad and we realize we have to put this off for 6 months. We make that decision then because the Australian government has stepped in and said, you cannot do this.
Yeah.
So Fox is in a position where they could, and this is the same for their AFL coverage and for their NRL coverage.
Yep.
They could stop those sports losing an awful lot of money and risking their players and their health, yep, just by saying, hold off for a month.
But you can also, going down this line of allegedly being Fox, you could see why that they wouldn't want the A-League doing this, because AFL just about to start, NRL just about to start, letting the A-League pause, even though we have a massively long off-season and could easily go off, you know, and tidy the end of this up. If they let the A-League off, AFL are like, well, we're running the same risk.
Yep, absolutely.
NRL, we're
running
the same risk.
They have to let them all off. There's no doubt they have to do it all.
And we're in the worst position out of all of them in a few ways, because while it's good, the A-League, yep, is because we're at the end of our season. While it's good, we don't have so many games to have to sort out. That end date of that contract is much closer.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're the league, rugby league, your end date for your contract is a long way away. So even if you do postpone for 2 months, you still have a few months to sort out whatever you're going to do. And if you are going to do some kind of, shortened tournament or whatever you're going
to
do, you've got two months to plan it, and you've got longer time to fit it in, and you've got a lot more. Whereas we have every day we wait is one day lost on that, and we're only a month or two away from the end date. So it's particularly problematic. And then one thing I do know for sure, this is not allegedly at all, is that the player contracts have end dates. Yes. They are tied to the end of the season. That has a fixed date. I believe it's probably the end of May as well.
Yep.
And at that point, all of those players are off contract. So if you're extending past there, you also have to renegotiate with every single player you've got, unless they happen to have a multi-year contract. But even then, the terms would not say that they're playing during that period of June, for example, because that's their off-season. That'll be a designated holiday period as per their contract. So you are renegotiating all of that, as well as hoping Fox let you off. And unsurprisingly, Fox have been dicks, I would assume. But
allegedly as fuck.
If the legal team are getting the word that, oh, we cannot pay, I think it is $56 million a year is the current contract?
Something like that.
Something in that ballpark. Yeah, let's call it 60 to 70 million.
Close, yeah.
You've got lawyers going, oh, we don't have to pay any of that. Or we could be nice to some people. No, we'll keep the $50 million. Thanks. That's a no brainer from the legal team. And clearly no one higher up than that stepped in. That needed to be a board or a CEO stepping in and going, we're going to do the right thing here, rather than the business decision thing.
But obviously that, that is something that could have happened.
And everything would indicate it has not.
Yeah. Well, we can categorically say.
And then you had every Fox pundit in the world coming out and going, oh, this is the best thing for the players.
Oh.
What? Under what circumstance was this the best thing for anyone other than the broadcaster?
The best thing for David Ball was to stay at home with his wife to look after their kids with the global pandemic kicking in.
Yep.
That is the best thing for player welfare.
Yep.
He's not going to say no to playing.
No.
Be there for
his... Davila doesn't get to go to Mexico and see his kid. Now, that's just as much to do with the actual coronavirus as it does with the league playing, but he still doesn't get to go. Luke Davila doesn't get to see his child born because he's going to be in isolation for the next 2 weeks and the baby's due within the next 2 weeks. So there's at no point is this decision the right decision for the player welfare at all. It might be the right decision for young guys trying to prove themselves and make a career. Fantastic. And you tell me, and Ella, you made this point earlier in our Slack chat, no player will say no. They all want to play.
Yeah.
And we should probably add that if we're kind of aware of this situation, the players are probably aware of a similar kind of thing and are going, yeah, if I want my job to be there next year, I really need to be playing. I need someone to pay me.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the other things that came up in the press conference that the FFA had on Monday. I think James Jackson, again, was either him or Gregor Rort, was saying this is to keep the sport alive. Now, anybody listening to a comment like that, kind of initially you're going, sorry, the FFA is going to save football. Like, what is this? Like, the sport still exists in some form or another, whether or not you have a governing body or, you know, any of that kind of thing. Like, people will play football. But when you start to unpack it, you know, around kind of the financial things that, you know, you were talking about, Dave, like, that's when those kinds of comments.
Yeah. And the fact that they've put off all other levels of football.
Yeah.
Everything else. With the exception of the W League.
Yeah, which they justified by saying it was just one more game. Yeah. So
I actually get the W League one. There's one game left.
It's one game, do it, it's
done. And you can do that behind closed doors. Yeah.
And you don't have teams travelling huge distances, all of that stuff, and it's all very understandable. Get it out of the way.
And if it was A-League and there was one game left, or perhaps the semis and the grand final, I'd probably say exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's not. And you're asking for a team to have to relocate their entire lives.
Yeah. From a country where there is, you know, comparatively low numbers.
Yep. Infection.
Yeah, to go to a place where there's a hell of a lot more. Yeah. I actually think they're probably in a safer place now where they are in that isolation for the next 2 weeks where they will be around nobody at all.
Yeah.
They're in a better place there than they could be in any other place.
Assuming
none of them already have it.
None of them already have it, and none of the staff at that facility already have it.
Yeah.
If you already have the facility compromised, they're going into a compromised facility. They'll all have it within a week.
Yeah.
You know,
and then your league
and
is
then
done.
Got no league.
But let's assume they've done, you know, all the right cleaning protocols and everything. Everything's all good. But, you know. That's a lot of assumptions.
Yeah, and it's a long time to be sitting over there, even if you're in isolation.
Yep.
It's a long time to be sitting over there and not come into contact with that when it's growing so quickly.
Like they have community transmission over in Aussie now. We, as far as we're aware, do not have it in New Zealand.
We've only had one effectively, which was a father to a son, which was transferred here, but that's not a community transmission because it's not between unrelated people, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
But... With 15 odd cases, all
20 in New Zealand.
Well, yeah, basically all being patient zeros coming from overseas.
Mm. Yeah.
The idea that there is no community transmission is not
to the point we've only run 1,000 tests.
Yeah, that's like to an extent.
It's going to step up massively, and we will actually get some idea of whether or not there has been community transmission. So,
What we have seen typically across the world is that the scale of ramp up is exponential because of that. What is it? The incubation period is like a couple of weeks. A lot of people not showing symptoms, and the testing cycle being kind of playing catch up. Mm. Is that we only notice once people start getting sick?
To some extent, I mean, we should be better at flattening that exponential curve because we very early on were getting people into isolation. A lot of countries where suspected cases were being allowed to keep roaming, you know, while they waited for a test result. Here, the advice from the outset has basically been, if you think you might have it,
self-isolate
and we'll sort it out later. Like, we'll worry about the testing later. But in theory, we're reducing that amount of transmission. So hopefully flattening that curve a lot. But I mean, you know, it's neither here nor there. People are going to catch it. It is going to have a community case at some point. It is inevitable, really.
Yeah.
So
realistically, we, you know, as much as they're isolating entire teams, the idea that they're not going to come in contact with someone who's infected.
Yeah. And it sounds like, particularly during those first 2 weeks, the protocols are going to be pretty strict. Like, they genuinely won't have contact with other people. So, for example, mealtime, there will be people who will cook for them in a kitchen. They will bring the food into a room. They will place, I assume, like, you know, buffet trays or whatever on a table, leave the room. The room will be cleaned by people with the food in there. Then the cleaners will leave. The team will have access to it to eat for an hour, and then they will leave. People will come in and clean again before the dishes and whatever are removed. They won't actually even see the people delivering their food. It'll just be a room that those people have happened to be in at separate times. So,
what a time.
The rest of the time, all they will see is each other and, you know, all of that. But
what a time to be running an Oompa Loompa business.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting for them. That's going to be quite a bizarre scenario, but it does sound like unless one of those cooks has corona and doesn't know about it, or someone in that facility already and it doesn't get cleaned right, you know, that should be pretty good. But after that, they're out in a hotel.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I think that it's
the 2 weeks of isolation are not designed to necessarily protect them. It's to protect the country from them bringing it in. If that, you know, that's what the point is when you're arriving into New Zealand at the moment, that within those 2 weeks, you would start showing symptoms if you haven't. So we put you alone in a room for 2 weeks and see if you've got it. And if you do, we don't let you out of the room. And if you don't, cool, run around, go for it. And that's all they're seeing really at that point. Those first 2 weeks are just, do any of the players have it? Nope. Cool. Now we'll let them out into Australia where there definitely is coronavirus. I mean, they had something like 50 new cases in Sydney just today, and they've got deaths in Sydney. You know, it's a lot worse there as a city than it is here as a whole country. So
It's 6 deaths nationally as of today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So has there been any kind of concrete word about how they're going to handle the W League final?
Apart from closed
doors.
Yeah, so that was obviously taking place behind closed doors. They've announced this afternoon when and where it'll be played. So it's going to be at Amy Park at 3:30 Aussie time on Saturday afternoon, so 5:30 our time.
And they're used to empty stadiums here, so
I'm just going to leave that.
You tell me I'm wrong, I'll happily retract it.
Well, they're not playing in Geelong, so.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice burn.
But yeah, so it's just they'll follow the protocol of the behind closed doors thing for the final, and then that's the last game of the W League. So that's kind of the timing wise for the W League has obviously been as good as it could be with all of this shit going on. It made for an odd atmosphere for the semi-finals. Obviously, the weekend just gone, so you know, semi played on Saturday, semi played on Sunday, very sparsely attended because obviously people are practicing social isolation.
It certainly looked like it on TV.
Yeah, it was just quite an odd thing to watch.
It looked like a practice game.
Yeah, they were just
the Wanderers one that I saw.
Yeah, no, that was quite a game. Melbourne City turned up and did what Melbourne City did, and the Wanderers were unfortunate to be caught in that crossfire again.
The pitch, it looked like it was Davey F more than it was nice enough pitch, had a lot of grass, but it did not look like there was even a stand.
Not as bad as pitches that they've had in previous seasons. But yeah, like it was a small affair, clearly just to get it over and done with.
And the Victory Sydney game?
Victory Sydney, yes. That was a pretty tight, cagey affair. Flea had a couple of chances in the first half to score, which he didn't take. Veronica Latsko scored in the 14th minute for Sydney. And kind of from there, it was just Sydney had turned up. Melbourne Victory couldn't find a way back into the game. Sydney always kind of turn up for finals. I think this is their 7th grand final in the history of the W League. So
they do. They go okay.
Yeah, they know how to handle final series. You know, the season might have bottomed out slightly towards the end, but they pulled it together for the final series. And yeah, and obviously on the Sunday game, Melbourne City beat Western Sydney Wanderers 5-1. Kind of within the first 20 minutes, you know, they're 2-0 up and you're going, well, we can see where this is going. Stoddy scored just before halftime. Loose ball in the penalty area. Keeper Abby Smith sort of punched it out and it just kind of fell to Stoddy, who was up for a corner in sort of the previous play, and she just pounced on it, lashed it into the goal. Decent finish. But again, you know, kind of like with the Davila goal, it's like you probably didn't need to hit it quite so hard, but, you know, since you're there, why not?
Yeah, so long as you hit the target.
Yeah.
If you miss.
If you sky it, you look like an idiot because that was an open goal.
Yeah.
So Sydney-Melbourne City grand final on the weekend. In all honesty, you'd be hard-pressed to see Melbourne not taking it out, but that's the thing with the W League. You know, you can say, well, this is definitely going to happen, and then the form ball gets chucked out the window and something else happens.
So it's 3 days from now and half the team might have coronavirus by then.
Yeah, you know, 22 players could have coronavirus by the end of the grand final.
Well, let's be honest, I can't see them forking out the same amount of cash to keep the W League sides isolated.
Yeah.
That does not seem the MO of the W League thus far.
FFA thus far.
FFA. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because, it'd be a shame if City, one, if Sydney didn't take it out after playing so well, or if Sydney could turn it around, it would be a game.
It'd be a great story.
Yeah.
It'd be a great game.
So,
and you'd hope for you know, we're obviously talking a lot about how there's a, you know, general lack of, you know, live sport on at the moment. Like I'm seeing kind of all the football journals that I follow, you know, who write for the Premier League and stuff. They're literally going, what can we watch? What can we write about? What happened in the 70s that we can sort of mine for content? At least like the one, if you're going to search for any kind of silver lining in all of this, at least the W League is really the one of the showpiece things happening this weekend.
It's the only game.
It's the only
game
that's going on. Everybody has to watch it. Yep. If you're, you know, if you're complaining about not being able to watch live football, and here is literally some live football, and you're not watching it, well, it says a lot.
Isn't the next time the A League play, the FIFA team of the week is going to be full of A League players. It's going to be the A League team of the week.
Yeah. Traumatic. Yeah. Speaking of football not being played, obviously there was handy prem stuff going on this week, but that is the last we will see of handy prem this season.
To be honest, it's the right decision. New Zealand football have been brave to make that decision, and I commend them for that because they have put the welfare of players first. The interesting part of it was awarding the title to Auckland City.
With an incomplete season next to it in the record books, it'll be well.
But would you care if you're an Auckland City player or Auckland City fan? You've won the title, you've got the title, and you've got the medals and the trophy to show for it. So you don't care. And in 5 years' time, no one's going to care. They're going to say Auckland City has another title.
I think, in fairness, it was deserved.
Well, I don't disagree.
The interesting thing, though, is they were catchable. There were two games still to be played, and they were only 4 points in front.
Three points in front.
There you go. So reasonably catchable. In those circumstances, you normally wouldn't award someone the championship. You wouldn't say that's a title. But I do think the reason they've done this is
OFC.
To me, it's reasonably clear. It's OFC. Yeah. It's so that they still have teams eligible for OFC next year. They needed to award something in some way, and then we went, well, let's just stick with the table.
And what's the gap between second and third?
Did they? No, they'd drawn both their games with Team Wellington, hadn't they?
I thought it was a draw and a win for Auckland City myself, but
either way, they needed to award two spots for OFC next year. They've gone, what's the best way of doing that? Let's go with the table as it is. But I still, like, you know, if you did this and they were 7 points ahead with two games to play, totally fine. I have no issue with that. They weren't catchable.
Sure.
They deserve it. But I think if you were to do this with a Premier League title or something with, you know, a handful of games left and a very catchable team at the top, there would be huge amount of uproar. I think in the handy Prem, the results are reasonably easy to predict in most cases. I think Auckland would have won this regardless, so it doesn't really matter. But
better goal difference, more goals scored. So they had those two issues on Team Wellington. The key with this table is that the top two teams are uncatchable.
Yeah.
So those where they give them those two places in the OFC, because neither of the teams below
could catch them, which is why I'm fine with it. But I don't think goal difference or any of that matters. Like I say, if this was the Premier League, you wouldn't go, oh, let's pause it now and decide it on goal difference. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't go, that wouldn't be a thing. You void the season.
It's exactly why they haven't done it, because I don't know yet what the right course of action to do. I think in this situation, I think this is the right thing to do.
Yeah. Well,
I genuinely do.
Here they've got two games remaining. It's reasonably clear who the top two teams are going to be. The top two teams are the only thing that really matters here. Yeah. They've done that, but they also have the problems of the fact that OFC probably still needs to be played at some point this season. You needed people for next seasons, and you're about to start bleeding into even deeper into community football and club season, which a lot of these players also play. So calling it made a lot of sense, just because of the other things going on in that same environment.
Speaking of the whole, like the other things and what other sort of areas the league would factor into, does this count for, you know, how they're going to shift into that new format of this is where the team finished in this season, therefore for the
I would assume so, yes.
Presumably this would,
They haven't specifically said that, but that certainly was coming in this season, and they have now confirmed a table of finishing positions, so I don't know why it wouldn't count.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to take us through the results, Cam?
Last round, Waitak beat Hawke's Bay 5-2. T-Dubs beat Southern 1-0. Did you watch any of that?
No,
I didn't see it. But you allergy see any of that? No, neither did I, to be honest. There was a 3-3 draw between Hamilton Wanderers and Tasman. Tasman equalising after the 90th minute. Dragons drew 1-1 with the Wellington Phoenix. Rezzies, again, they scored in the 94th minute. And the game that I think won all the title was a 2-0 win for them over Eastern Suburbs. If East had got up and T-Dub's result had stayed the same, I think they probably would have shared the title between them. Because they'd have been on the same number of points, and whilst they've had better stuff, you're still two games to play, it's overturnable. So, yeah, that leaves the table basically. Auckland champions on 37 points, T-Dub second on 34 points, Waitak on 27 and third, and Easts on 22 and fourth. Tasman finished fifth, which is a very commendable result for them on 20 points. Hamilton Wanderers in sixth on 20 points. And Southern in 7th on 19 points. Wenix had their best ever season. They finished in 8th on 18 points, ahead of Hawke's Bay on 15 and Canterbury on 10.
I know I've been banging on about it all season, but there's a fantastic result for the Rezies, for the Wenix.
Absolutely. That's fantastic.
I mean, how many players have they got from last year? Three or four?
Not a lot.
It'd be very, very few.
Yeah, and I can only recall three games where they've had a decent chunk of professional footballers down to help them. And two of those they lost.
So, yeah. Whoops.
And the other one was a draw. So the kids have done this by themselves, which has been great.
Yeah. We've got to give credit to Ben Wayne. He scored when he's come on for them, especially lately. He has popped goals in, but there's been a few guys doing a pretty good shift in there as well. Some kids that I had never seen before. Bodes well for next year.
A lot more of.
Yeah. I think there's a few guys in there. It's kind of a shame that Sam Sutton hasn't got more game time for them.
I agree. But it's awesome for Sam that he's been so tied up in the first team squad, and he's been training with them constantly every training session.
Yeah, I just really like young fellas to get game time.
Has this been discussed that Sam Sutton and Zach Jones are travelling with the team,
which is excellent.
Just in case people aren't aware of that.
Zach Jones is the third goalkeeper. Yeah. Yeah. He's been the starting goalkeeper for the Rezies. If you watch the warm-ups prior to the Phoenix games, he is the other goalkeeper that's not Salah Marinovic that you see out on the field.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
it's interesting taking third keeper.
He also trains every day.
Like under normal circumstances with six rounds to play, you might get an injury to a keeper and you would absolutely bring your third up to sit on the bench. So the Phoenix have proactively gone, we're going to take two additional reserves outside of the match day squad, so that they're there and available, because otherwise you need 14 days to bring a player in and you're playing games every 3 days. So that's not going to be a goer.
Yeah. So, because otherwise you're going to end up with, Uli Davila starting in goal and he's short.
Yeah. So taking a third keeper makes sense to me. And Sutton, as you say, has been so involved in that first team squad, he's a no-brainer to be that extra body you're taking along.
Jones and Sutton train every day with the squad. So they are there. They're pro in everything but name, effectively. So
I was kind of surprised that there weren't wasn't a couple more players taken along
but you've got 24 and it's a 2 week stand down. So you might actually go, I need to bring in another two or three guys, but I need them for 2 weeks time. So you can bring them in at that point. They've got enough there to cover. If you get an injury to any one of your three keepers, you will then bring someone across and they will sit out for 2 weeks and you just hope you don't get any more injuries for them in those 2 weeks. That's basically it. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that's kind of football grinding to a bit of a halt for the moment.
Do we do the rest of the A-League round? I don't know if we do.
Do we care?
Yeah.
Basic scenario, we're sitting third. We're a point behind City and 3 points ahead of Brisbane. And
there have been a couple of interesting results in that Western United got up. Adelaide were awful against Newcastle again.
Yeah, Adelaide's gone off the ball. Yeah. Since they got rid of Vinny Lea, they've really fallen apart.
Yeah, I'm sure it's Vinny Lea.
100% it's Vinny Lea. No, happy birthday, Vin. It's your birthday today.
Yeah, I'm sure he's listening.
Yep, he always does.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened with Adelaide, but they have shit the bed, something horrible, and I think they've lost or drawn their last five. Mm. It's just been diabolical. And Western United have actually figured out how to play football again. Mm. Maybe they got paid this week. Allegedly.
I'm actually one of the things I am really disappointed. I was really looking forward to, and the way the teams were going, it was looking like a good possibility.
No,
of having
you're wrong. Shut up. You are wrong.
And now we just don't have that
chance.
Shut
up. You are wrong.
I am wrong, because it's not going to happen. The possibility of happening, though.
Yeah,
it was
wrong.
Not anymore.
And then concerning, we go and, a concerning possibility.
And then we can go and win the league, and we're not going to be there to see it, and we can't welcome it back, and then we can't get hold of the trophy.
Well,
we can't even have an end-of-season function to celebrate it.
Can you imagine they get... Oh, I guess it's not really a thing with the toilet seat, but if you'd won a cup instead, it's like you got to fill it up with something, and it's like no, you're not sharing that bloody vessel. Stop.
Someone comes in and wipes it between each player sipping. No, but the weirdest thing is, it's a very real possibility that whoever wins the title, and let's say it's us, right? I think if it's Sydney winning final series or someone like that who've won it before, it's probably less of a thing. But if it's someone like us, first time winners, chances are we're not even going to be able to watch this at a pub. It's going to be everyone watching at home in their own homes.
Yep.
celebrating alone. It's going to be very, very weird.
The grand final is going to be 6 weeks from now.
We set up. If we set up a Discord server or something like they do for gaming, so we're all just sitting on our own couches.
I mean, I'm on board with that. Like, something's got to happen, because chances are, by the time we get to a grand final, I don't think bars like King's would be open and showing this. I think you'd certainly be talking about a gathering of larger than 500 people. So, you know, there's just no scenario in which it can be facilitated. At best, it's watching with your mate who's popped around, or it's you alone at home.
I don't see this passing in 6 weeks. I think, we've got till the end, say, If we are done by the beginning of May, we've got off quite lightly with the coronavirus, and that's great, because then we can still have an end of season function if we win it. Even if we don't win it, we still have, you know, the normal end of season as we would usually do at the end of May, which is great. But the chances are, the way the rest of the world is going, we're looking at 4 months for this. So.
Yep. And restrictions being more restrictive than they are currently.
Oh, and I think that's not long before they come in.
Yeah, I
schools think closed. You know, all of that sort of stuff is very.
You shut up with that kind of stupidity.
I reckon, honestly, mate, and I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Community transmission. I think you'll see it announced.
Well, there was a Dunedin school kid that was diagnosed today. So
no community transmission.
Yeah, that was his dad. So they've closed the school. If there's a community transmission there,
I'm dollars to donuts. High school kid, they've done something, and so they spread it around. Mm-hmm. So Dunedin will be just a heaving swell of pathogens.
Ghost town. Absolute ghost town.
Yeah, I am reading myself.
We might have to start recording remotely pretty soon. We were discussing that before the record. Yep. Yeah, so if there is a big step down in audio quality, we apologise. But that's
Patrick's fault.
That's so that we can keep recording for you. It's going to come down to internet connections and quality of microphones that people have at home. So
yeah, well, that's also the problem. Is we're going to have to record and do two games. You know, potentially two rounds.
Yep.
Which is fine, potentially three at times. And that's okay too. If we can still meet up in a room, we will. But there's every chance that we won't be doing that for a few months.
Yeah, if I'm stuck, I should add that I'm getting a reno done, and so I'm sharing a bedsit with my partner, my four-year-old, two dogs, right next to us, school.
Your reno's not getting done, mate.
Yeah. They're quite.
Just put it on hold.
They are quite confident that they're going ahead.
Are you moving downstairs?
Done. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a treat. Enjoy that.
And for two and a half months.
Yeah. And if I'm quarantined, work, I'm working there as well. So.
God.
Coolio.
I mean, if you need a dog sitter.
For a few months. Ella's free, yeah. Because fuck, I'm not having your dogs in my place. Crazy.
No, we won't talk about my dogs, because we should probably just end and go home and see our loved ones and try not to spread.
To be honest, mate, we're going to be seeing an awful lot of them in the weeks to come. So away is actually okay.
That is true. I mean, we have done well socially distancing ourselves. We are basically 2 metres apart.
For you, we said we'd take a side of the table
you
each.
You
grabbed
side.
Ella's side of the table.
Which is a pretty poor effort.
Yeah, if I'm infected, fuck you for it.
She's going to come around and cough on your child.
And the dogs.
Yes.
Oh, no, dogs don't
and
get
your
it.
Wife. Oh, yeah, dogs don't get it. That's right. Yeah. Who let the dogs out, didn't they?
They did.
Oh. Thanks for listening, everybody. I apologize profusely. Please keep listening.
For my dad jokes. Hoorah.
Bye now.
Cam's dad jokes do not represent the views of the other members of this podcast.
Yes, they fucking do.
Allegedly as fuck brings you.
We're doing it for the money brings you. Doing what the fox says brings you.
Player welfare brings you. Buying shots for Marco Rojas in Danger Danger brings you.